For into the midst of all these policies comes the Ring of Power, the foundation of Barad-dûr, and the hope of Sauron. Concerning this thing, my lords, you now all know enough for the understanding of our plight, and of Sauron's. If he regains it, your valor is vain, and his victory will be swift and complete, so complete that none can foresee the end of it while this world lasts. If it is destroyed, then he'll fall, and his fall will be so low that none can foresee his arising ever again. For he will lose the best part of the strength that was native to him in his beginning, and all that was made or begun with that power will crumble, and he will be maimed forever, becoming a mere spirit of malice that gnaws itself in the shadows, but cannot again grow or take shape. And so a great evil of this world will be removed. Other evils there are that may come, for Sauron is himself but a servant or emissary. Yet it is not our part to muster all the tides of the world, but to do what is in us for the succour of those years wherein we are set, uprooting the evil in the fields that we know, so that those who live after may have clean earth to till. What weather they shall have is not ours to rule. Now Sauron knows all this, and he knows that this precious thing which he lost has been found again. But he does not yet know where it is, or so we hope. And therefore he is now in great doubt. For if we have found this thing, there are some among us with strength enough to wield it. That too he knows. For do I not guess rightly, Aragorn, that you have shown yourself to him in the stone of Orthonk?
I did so ere I rode from the Hornburg, answered Aragorn. I deemed that the time was ripe, and that the stone had come to me for just such a purpose.
It was then 10 days since the ring-bearer went east from Rauros, and the Eye of Sauron, I thought, should be drawn out from his own land. Too seldom has he been challenged since he returned to his tower. Though if I had foreseen how swift would be his onset in answer, maybe I should not have dared to show myself. Bare time was given me to come to your aid.
But how is this? Said Éomer. All is vain, you say, if he has the ring. Why should he think it not vain to assail us, if we have it?
He is not yet sure, said Gandalf. And he has not built up his power by waiting until his enemies are secure, as we have done. Also, we could not learn how to wield the full power all in a day. Indeed, it can be used only by one master alone, not by many, and he will look for a time of strife, ere one of the great among us makes himself master and puts down the others. In that time, the ring might aid him, if he were certain. He is watching. He sees much and hears much. His Nazgûl are still abroad. They passed over this field ere the sunrise, though few of the weary and sleeping were aware of them. He studies the signs. The sword that robbed him of his treasure remade, the winds of fortune turning in our favour, and the defeat unlooked for of his first assault, the fall of his great captain. His doubt will be growing, even as we speak here. His eye is now straining towards us, blind almost to all else that is moving. So we must keep it. Therein lies all our hope. This, then, is my counsel. We have not the ring. In wisdom or great folly it has been sent away to be destroyed, lest it destroy us. Without it we cannot by force defeat his force. But we must at all costs keep his eye from his true peril. We cannot achieve victory by arms, but by arms we can give the ring-bearer his only chance, frail though it may be. As Aragorn has begun, so we must go on. We must push Sauron to his last throw. We must call out his hidden strength, so that he shall empty his land. We must march out to meet him at once. We must make ourselves the bait. Though his jaws should close on us, he will take that bait in hope and in greed, for he will think that in such rashness he sees the pride of the new ring-lord, and he will say, So, he pushes out his neck too soon and too far. Let him come on, and behold, I will have him in a trap from which he cannot escape. There I will crush him, and what he has taken in his insolence shall be mine again forever. We must walk open-eyed into that trap with courage, but small hope for ourselves. For, my lords, it may well prove that we ourselves shall perish utterly in a black battle far from the living lands, so that even if Barad-dûr be thrown down, we shall not live to see a new age. But this, I deem, is our duty. And better so than to perish nonetheless, as we surely shall, if we sit here and know as we die that no new age shall be. They were silent for a while. At length Aragorn spoke. As I have begun, so I will go on. We come now to the very brink, where hope and despair are akin. To waver is to fall. Let none now reject the counsels of Gandalf, whose long labours against Sauron come at last to their test. But for him, all would long ago have been lost. Nonetheless, I don't yet claim to command any man. Let others choose as they will. Then said Elro here, From the north we came with this purpose, and from Elrond our father we brought this very counsel. We will not turn back. As for myself, said Eomer, I've little knowledge of these deep matters, but I need it not. This I know, and it's enough, that as my friend Aragorn succored me and my people, so I'll aid him when he calls. I will go. As for me, said Imrahil, the Lord Aragorn I hold to be my liege lord, whether he claim it or no. His wish is to me a command. I will go also. Yet for a while I stand in the place of the steward of Gondor, and it is mine to think first of its people. To prudence some heed must still be given, for we must prepare against all chances, good as well as evil. Now it may be that we shall triumph, and while there is any hope of this, Gondor must be protected. I would not have us return with victory to a city in ruins and a land ravaged behind us. And yet we learn from the Rohirrim that there is an army still unfought upon our northern flank.
That is true, said Gandalf. I do not counsel you to leave the city all unmanned. Indeed, the force that we lead east need not be great enough for any assault in earnest upon Mordor, so long as it be great enough to challenge battle. And it must move soon. Therefore I ask the captains, what force could we muster and lead out in 2 days' time at the latest? And they must be hardy men that go willingly, knowing their peril.
All are weary, and very many have wounds light or grievous, said Eomer. And we've suffered much loss of our horses, and that is ill to bear. If we must ride soon, then I cannot hope to lead even 2,000s, and yet leave as many for the defence of the city.
We have not only to reckon with those who fought on this field, said Aragorn. New strength is on the way from the southern fiefs, now that the coasts have been rid.
4,000s I sent marching from Pelagia through Lossarnoch 2 days ago, and Angbor the Fearless rides before them. If we set out in 2 days more, they will draw nigh ere we depart. Moreover, many were bidden to follow me up the river in any craft they could gather, and with this wind they will soon be at hand. Indeed, several ships have already come to the Harland. I judge that we could lead out 7,000s of horse and foot, and yet leave the city in better defence than it was when the assault began.
The gate is destroyed, said Imrahil, and where now is the skill to rebuild it and set it up anew?
In Erebor and the kingdom of Dain there is such skill, said Aragorn. And if all our hopes don't perish, then in time I'll send Gimli, Gloin's son, to ask for rights of the mountain. But men are better than gates, and no gate will endure against our enemy if men desert it. This, then, was the end of the debate of the lords, that they should set forth on the second morning from that day with 7,000s, if these might be found, and the great part of this force should be on foot, because of the evil lands into which they would go. Aragorn should find some 2,000 of those that he had gathered to him in the south, but Imrahil should find 3,500, and Eomer find hundreds of the Rohirrim who were unhorsed but themselves war-worthy, and he himself should lead 500 of his best riders on horse. And another company of 500 horse there should be, among which should ride the sons of Elrond with the Dúnedain and the knights of Dol Amroth. All told, 6,000 foot and 1,000 horse. But the main strength of the Rohirrim that remained horsed and able to fight, some 3,000 under the command of Elfhelm, should waylay the west road against the enemy that was in Anorion. And at once swift riders were sent out to gather what news they could northwards, and eastwards from Osgiliath and the road to Minas Morgul. And when they had reckoned up all their strength and taken thought for the journeys they should make and the roads they should choose, Imrahil suddenly laughed aloud.
"Surely," he cried, "this is the greatest jest in all the history of Gondor, that we should ride with 7,000, scarce as many as the vanguard of its army in the days of its power, to assail the mountains and the impenetrable gate of the Black Land. So might a child threaten a mail-clad knight with a bow of string and green willow. If the Dark Lord knows so much as you say, Mithrandir, will he not rather smile than fear, and with his little finger crush us like a fly that tries to sting him? No, he will try to trap the fly and take the sting," said Gandalf. "And there are names among us that are worth more than 1,000 mail-clad knights apiece. No, he will not smile." "Neither shall we," said Aragorn. "If this be jest, then it is too bitter for laughter. Nay, it is the last move in a great jeopardy, and for one side or the other it will bring the end of the game." Then he drew Andúril, and held it up glittering in the sun. "You shall not be sheathed again until the last battle is fought," he said.
Chapter 10. The Black Gate Opens. 2 days later, the army of the West was all assembled on the Pelennor. The host of orcs and easterlings had turned back out of Anorion, but harried and scattered by the Rohirrim, they had broken and fled with little fighting towards Caer Andros. And with that threat destroyed and new strength arriving out of the south, the city was as well manned as might be. Scouts reported that no enemies remained upon the roads east as far as the crossroads of the fallen king. All now was ready for the last throw. Legolas and Gimli were to ride again together in the company of Aragorn and Gandalf, who went in the van with the Dúnedain and the sons of Elrond. But Merry, to his shame, was not to go with them.
"You're not fit for such a journey," said Aragorn. "But don't be ashamed. If you do no more in this war, you have already earned great honour. Peregrine shall go and represent the Shire folk, and do not grudge him his chance of peril. For though he has done as well as his fortune allowed him, he has yet to match your deed. But in truth, all now are in like danger. Though it may be our part to find a bitter end before the gate of Mordor, if we do so, then you will come also to a last stand, either here or wherever the black tide overtakes you. Farewell." And so despondently Merry now stood and watched the mustering of the army. Birgil was with him, and he also was downcast, for his father was to march leading a company of the men of the city. He could not rejoin the guard until his case was judged. In that same company Pippin was also to go, as a soldier of Gondor. Merry could see him not far off, a small but upright figure among the tall men of Minas Tirith. At last the trumpets rang and the army began to move. Troop by troop and company by company, they wheeled and went off eastward. And long after they had passed away out of sight down the great road to the causeway, Merry stood there. The last glint of the morning sun on spear and helm twinkled and was lost, and still he remained with bowed head and heavy heart, feeling friendless and alone. Every one that he cared for had gone away into the gloom that hung over the distant eastern sky.
and little hope at all was left in his heart that he would ever see any of them again. As if recalled by his mood of despair, the pain in his arm returned, and he felt weak and old, and the sunlight seemed thin. He was roused by the touch of Bergil's hand. "Come, Master Perian," said the lad. "You are still in pain, I see. I will help you back to the healers. But don't fear. They'll come back. The men of Minas Tirith will never be overcome. And now they have the Lord Elfstone, and Beregond of the Guard, too." Ere noon the army came to Osgiliath. There all the workers and craftsmen that could be spared were busy. Some were strengthening the ferries and boat bridges that the enemy had made, and in part destroyed when they fled. Some gathered stores and booty, and others on the eastern side across the river were throwing up hasty works of defence. The vanguard passed on through the ruins of old Gondor, and over the wide river, and on up the long straight road that in the high days had been made to run from the fair Tower of the Sun to the tall Tower of the Moon, which now was Minas Morgul in its accursed vale. 5 miles beyond Osgiliath they halted, ending their first day's march. But the horsemen pressed on, and ere evening they came to the crossroads and the great ring of trees, and all was silent. No sign of any enemy had they seen, no cry or call had been heard, no shaft had sped from rock or thicket by the way, yet ever as they went forward they felt the watchfulness of the land increase. Tree and stone, blade and leaf were listening. The darkness had been dispelled, and far away westward sunset was on the Vale of Anduin, and the white peaks of the mountains blushed in the blue air, but a shadow and a gloom brooded upon the Efel Duath. Then Aragorn set trumpeters at each of the four roads that ran into the ring of trees, and they blew a great fanfare, and the heralds cried aloud, "The lords of Gondor have returned, and all this land that is theirs they take back." The hideous orc head that was set upon the carven figure was cast down and broken in pieces, and the old king's head was raised and set in its place once more, still crowned with white and golden flowers. And men laboured to wash and pare away all the foul scrawls that orcs had put upon the stone. Now in their debate, some had counselled that Minas Morgul should first be assailed, and if they might take it, it should be utterly destroyed. "And maybe," said Imrahil, "the road that leads thence to the pass above will prove an easier way of assault upon the Dark Lord than his northern gate." But against this Gandalf had spoken urgently, because of the evil that dwelt in the valley, where the minds of living men were turned to madness and horror, and because also of the news that Faramir had brought. For if the ring-bearer had indeed attempted that way, then above all they should not draw the eye of Mordor thither. So the next day, when the main host came up, they set a strong guard upon the crossroads to make some defence, if Mordor should send a force over the Morgul Pass, or should bring more men up from the south. For that guard they chose mostly archers who knew the ways of Ithilien, and would lie hid in the woods and slopes about the meeting of the ways. But Gandalf and Aragorn rode with the vanguard to the entrance of Morgul Vale, and looked on the evil city. It was dark and lifeless, but the orcs and lesser creatures of Mordor that had dwelt there had been destroyed in battle, and the Nazgul were abroad. Yet the air of the valley was heavy with fear and enmity. Then they broke the evil bridge, and set red flames in the noisome fields, and departed.